Welcome to a new edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have a really, really exciting young lady who's doing something with my favorite subject, which is alcohol. Meenakshi Singh, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. It's a pleasure.
Meenakshi is the founder of Cocktails and Dreams and Sidecar Cocktails Bars. She has worked for Pernod Ricard and she is a graduate from the Hotel Management School in Pusa. Meenakshi, before you got into the business of Cocktails and Dreams and Sidecar, tell me a little bit about your early life.
I was a young hotel management graduate right out of college. I actually went the traditional route initially. I joined the Taj Hotel. For some reason or the other, it did not work out because it wasn't exciting enough. Mm-hmm. And my journey became a lot more interesting, okay. I would say, is because I quit that job against my parents' wishes. I met at that time someone who is right now my business partner, okay. Yungdup, and he is the one who's actually helped me navigate this industry a lot better. Mm-hmm. And right after I met him, I started bartending actually. And you know, usually one bartends for the extra pocket money, mm-hmm. and that was what my primary reason was. Okay. And while doing that, I realized that I really love the industry. Okay. I absolutely love the subject of alcohol. It has always intrigued me. Mm-hmm. You know, the process of making the spirits, to aging, to the whole history, to the stories. Correct. It's just exciting. It's a very exciting world. And at that time, I didn't realize how, you know, what passion would be or being passionate about your job is. Mm-hmm. So I just pretty much followed, your destiny took you. And right after that, Yungdup introduced me to someone who was in the industry. They had just done a startup. You know, this is the Y2K time. And they had just started a .com called the Taliho.com. Mm-hmm. It was co-founded by, again, really interesting people. Vikram Achanta and Krishna Nagaraj, mm-hmm. and they both IIM Calcutta, great achievers in their own life, and then quit everything, mm-hmm. and started this company only for the passion of alcohol.
Wow.
So they were doing a lot of beverage trainings, a whole lot of things in that industry, but not necessarily bartending or in the region of cocktails. Mm-hmm. And I was their first employee, so I joined very happily.
Okay.
And then I realized this was an amazing world for me, because for that 3.5 years, I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. I understood what the industry is about. It wasn't just about drinks. It wasn't just about making cocktails. It was also selling them.
Correct.
It was also the story behind them. It was also the narrative that, mm-hmm. that goes with it. So I picked up a lot from them. I mean, they were my mentors, mm-hmm. is how I would like to put it.
Okay.
And then I got an opportunity to work with Diageo. Mm-hmm. For a very brief period of time, I worked for them, for Captain Morgan Rum and other brands.
Yep.
And then from there on, I got my career break, in the sense that I went to Pernod Ricard, mm-hmm. and that was a massive, again, in MNC and all of that.
Where you did some amazing things.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that was my career progression. Mm-hmm. And right after Pernod Ricard is, again, 3.5 years is when I think Yungdup and I have been talking about making our own bar.
Okay.
We made our first Excel sheet in 2005, by the way.
Okay.
And we kept revisiting that Excel sheet. Funnily, and then around 2011-12, we were like, okay, let's just do this. And then I told him, then for us to do this, I'll have to quit my job. And he said, well, he was already doing his own thing. He's an established bartender, mixologist, author, all of that. So, I mean, for me, the stake was higher. So I quit the job and we started Cocktails and Dreams. This is 2012, yes.
So, you know, tell me what goes into making a bar, and I'll come into cocktails later, but you know, I've visited bars all over the world, and you know, I've visited a specialized malt bar in, say, New York,
yes,
where the whole focus is only on how the Japanese guy carves the ice cube,
yes,
right? So what goes into making a successful cocktail bar?
It's a difficult question, and interesting as well, because lots goes into it.
Okay.
First and foremost, as I feel, the people behind it are the, you know, they are the ones who have to drive it. They are the ones who have to run it. Traditionally in India, unfortunately, bars and restaurants have been looked at in a very money-making business point of view, unlike the West and a lot of now other countries where the business owners are very passionate about, you know, they sit at the bar, they are the ones who are serving you, they are the ones who are interacting with you. Absolutely. And hence the vibe comes from there, right? Now in India, you can see a lot more interesting concepts coming in, yes, and interesting people are, you know, making cocktails and doing a lot of things. A lot of chefs are owning bars, restaurants now, which is interesting. So that is a very important part, the passion which I was talking about, just the drive itself, that you have to love this industry to death. So you have to love it so much that you don't have a problem working for whatever number of hours it takes. You have to take a lot of negative comments all the time. You have to take positive. So you have to be really resilient to be in this industry. It's not easy. Hours are long. Lifestyle is very tough. Personal life mostly takes backseat a lot of times. Those are tough. Those are the challenges that I see. But at the same time, it's very, very rewarding as well. So it takes. That is your key thing. If the people who are running the place are, they have their heart in the right place, like I'd like to say, and mind, I think rest of it just flows. I mean,
so what I'm hearing you say is that the owner's passion has to come into
absolutely. It's an art. So it's
So do you see franchised outlets, or do you see a chain of bars coming up, or is that going to be tough?
It is. It's a challenge because franchise basically means you're replicating your model, and you know you're losing that soul somewhere in the process. But then, for the sake of business, for your own growth, if that's what it takes, if there is a way to control it, why not? I mean, I'm all for growth, and if you have a model on your hand which can be replicated and without making it completely soulless. I mean, if there is a way to do that, why not?
Sure, I agree. So my next question to you is, you know, what goes into making a good cocktail?
Apart from great ingredients, fabulous ambience, the skill of the bartender, cocktail making is a lot more sensory. So it's a lot about the experience that you have in the bar. It could be simply nice music playing in the background, the bartender speaking pleasantly to you. It could just be a whiskey soda or whiskey pani that you're having. There is absolutely as such, the experience of the cocktail is also that. It's visual, it's obviously sensory in terms of the taste and the aroma, but it's also a lot of things which are working for you, right? So the bar has to lend that to you as an experience.
The ambiance is very critical.
Absolutely. And ambiance, and apart from that, the person who's also delivering it to you. Unlike, say, a chef, when a chef is in the background, you don't really interact with the chef, or you don't really get to know what's happening to your dish which comes to your table. But in a bar environment, the bartender can really make a difference to your experience. You could be having the worst of the day, and suddenly, just by having a good conversation with the bartender, he can put a smile on your face or tell you some silly joke or, you know, joke about anything in the world, and just make your day a lot better. So,
in fact, you're right. I mean, in one of my books, I have mentioned that the only friend an individual had was his bartender, where he would go and pour his heart out.
Believe me, we are on camera, we have a lot of stories as well. Right. We hear things all the time. I mean, good things, bad things, ugly things, but that's life. Right. It's interesting, but that's how you are so much more open to that.
I agree. So tell me, do all alcohols lend themselves to good cocktails?
Why not? I mean, the quality matters. Don't go absolutely below, you know, in terms of the category. But I would say that the world is your oyster. So go with whatever you feel like. It's your creativity. We always give our bartenders a lot of push in terms of creating new things. We have always promoted that in terms of even the new age equipments, the new trends, what is happening globally. We follow a lot of things on, you know, internationally, what the other bars are doing. And we also create a lot of things locally. That's the fun of it, right? Otherwise, if you have to make the same drink over and over, you would get bored of it.
So is Meenakshi Singh biased for any types of alcohol, or would you use anything?
You know, I think it's an age and stage question. Recently, for the last, say, 2 to 3 years, I've started getting really interested in whiskeys. It just seems like a it's a massive world out there, mm-hmm. and there's so many whiskies I haven't tasted and I don't know about, and it just seems like, you know, it's like you're exploring something new every time you're doing that. And I think that way the aged spirits always have intrigued me, and mm-hmm. I think that's a global truth for most of the brands.
Mm-hmm. And yet aging seems to be now becoming a challenge for the whiskey industry.
It is. Why not? I mean, that's the space issue. That's the money issue. Yeah. Aging is expensive.
Yeah.
Gins are all the rage right now, is because I can make a gin today and sell it tomorrow. Mm. And it's as simple as that. So the complexity of gin is nothing to do with the time that's been spent on it. It's about the craft itself. Mm. While that is what the, you know, new age spirits are. Yeah.
So just deviating from my regular questions on gins, my hypothesis on gins is that they're selling more, not because people like the gin, but because there are one dozen different types of bitters available, which are different kinds of flavors.
Yeah, there is a lot to that conversation.
Okay.
Gin is a completely different.
We'll keep that for another show with you sometime when we only talk gins. But now let's come back to alcohol. Are people loyal to one type of alcohol based on your experience, or do people switch from a whiskey to a vodka to a gin to, you know, a rum and go all over the place?
So the loyalty that what I now we see is breaking a bit in terms of the younger ones. So the now the 30 somethings are exploring a lot more. So for example, earlier when you would meet someone who would be like, oh, I'm only a whiskey drinker. Now you don't hear that anymore. You will be like, okay, I also drink gin. Mm-hmm. I also drink a rum. I also drink a mezcal.
Yeah.
I also like pisco. So it's interesting because there are people who've traveled and there are people who've experienced these things. Earlier it was very whiskey, vodka, rum, gin. So those are the five things that I drink, or wine, or beer, you know. So now it's actually transitioning into various, you know, occasions as well. So for example, if you're going to a day brunch kind of thing, you'll shift to a, you know, something else, something like a Pimm's, or, you know, something else completely. You don't have to stick to a Bloody Mary, you know, as traditionally
I agree with you. So, you know, you also are doing a bartending course at Cocktails and Dreams. Tell me about this. Can I just come and apply and
we are exploring that in terms of the consumers. Right now it's for professionals.
Okay.
We have done a few rounds of consumer sessions, but I need a certain quorum. I need a certain number of people to be get together for the effort that it takes to do the course. So for that I have to focus on it. But the school is primarily run by Young Dup, who's my business partner. It's his property, and he's been running it for 15 so years. And they graduate almost like, I think, 100 kids in a year who are going out and, you know, learning the art of bartending. They have 6-month course, 3-month courses, and so on and so forth, like different courses are available. And they are just the basic, like, let's start with what is whiskey and what is wine and what is gin. And from there on to actually experiencing the entire, you know, mixing and, you know, getting the hands-on experience as well. So now we are also taking in the students to actually come to the bars. They're actually learning. They're also interacting with our bartenders. So there's a lot of cross-training that we are promoting now.
Okay.
We've also tied up with a bunch of other bars where they go to train as well. So it's about creating that community where, you know, I mean, we can also exchange some talent.
Well, just a thought for you, you know, talk to your partner. You may have a huge market sitting outside beyond kids.
I know.
You know, the 55, 60 plus like me, who have now got more time and would love to experiment.
Absolutely. And I'm with you. I know that. And we have been wanting to do a course for at least a month long, which is, you know, because it's a very expansive subject. Yeah, okay. So I can't just like, so we do cocktail workshops, we do gin workshops, we do whiskey workshops. So those are like 2-hour, 3-hour.
Yeah.
So you can attend it and you'll learn quickly how to make a good martini, and you'll make it yourself and you'll go home happy that you learned something, right? So those things we are already doing. But in terms of a real course, which is certified, etc.,
certification is, of course, not needed for.
Yeah, but we do have certification, which is always good to put it on your bar right now.
So my next question to you, Vinakshi, is that, you know, whenever I want to mix a cocktail or whenever I talk to friends, you look, plenty of ingredients are available, I mean, plenty of recipes are available online, but you can't find all the ingredients. Where do I go and look for ingredients for my cocktail in India?
See, spirits are more spirits or less available. Bitters are a little tough in India to get your hands on. That's complicated excise rules, and you know, excise is a state subject in India, so it complicates everything a lot more. Apart from that, the ingredients that you use, I would suggest that you go for the local ingredients, the things that you get in your supermarket, just like you're cooking at home. Why can't you make a nice, just go with the same flavor? So like, for example, if you love an apple pie, you can make an apple pie cocktail as well. It's just apple and cinnamon, and if you like a whiskey in it, and you know, you get the same. So if you have the idea, it's easy to replicate and get your ingredients, I would say, from the local market, rather than looking online and going all, you know, don't go looking for dragon fruit, is what I'm suggesting.
I agree. And then name it yourself.
Yeah, why not? I mean, do it yourself. That's the fun of it as well. I mean, for your own party, you should, I mean, right now, if peaches are in season, go and buy some bunch of peaches, put them in the gin, next day, open them up, and it's a great drink itself.
Just I agree.
Drop some bitters.
I agree. So my next question on alcohol before I move to the next segment is, you know, about craft spirits. You know, there are plenty of craft spirits available all over the world. I just picked up some craft whiskeys from California. Craft with the beers are available. How is the whole craft spirit business changing alcohol in India?
Oh, it's a slow start, but it's a great start. I would say there is a whole lot of spirits, and I think globally, you know, the world is looking at India and China mostly for the growth. It is a very interesting time to be in the industry, because we regularly hear about you know, an interesting gin launching, or at least in the plan, or very recently we heard about a rum coming in. Then, you know, so craft spirits is a lot about the people who are behind the brand, because it's so local, it's so controllable. That's the great part about it, you know. So they are looking at regional ingredients which are available, the story is local. Everything about it is a lot more relatable, right? Correct. So the craft spirit itself lends a lot more versus an international brand, which is, you know, seen everywhere in the world. This has a certain story, a background. It's got culture behind. It's got, you know, all of that. So, you know, traditions, which are a massive attraction to any product. If it has a history and background and tradition, that's you've got that, you know. And that's what craft industry is. A lot of beers and gins are now available in the market, coming in now, a lot more. Next 3-4 years will be very exciting. I'm hoping that you'll get a lot more, especially Goa, and you know, at least in the southern part of our country, we are doing better.
So let's move on to a little bit about gender balance. But before I get into your thoughts on gender balance, you're in an industry which was traditionally dominated by men, and I'm now beginning to see a lot more women even as bar in behind the bar counter. How has that experience been?
You know, I would say that it's as bad as it gets. There are very few women who have been in the industry, at least in the bar industry. Very few and far is the word. And the ones who are there, you know, we haven't been able to grow that as well, you know, as I would have wanted it to grow. It's the unfortunate truth of the industry as such. Also, what complicates it more is the timings, is the issue of security, drops, pickups. So unlike, say, a corporate where you have a certain time and, you know, your weekends are done, and, you know, women, when they get married, they have added responsibilities, having a baby then adds on everything else. Everything, you know, is working against the industry because of the timing and what the expectation is. So that has been a challenge. Personally, I have really tried very hard, and I'm still, I mean, this year, this is my goal for 2020, to make sure that we involve a lot more girls and women in our bars, in different other prospects. I mean, it doesn't have to be only bartending. If that is an issue, for example, Haryana doesn't even allow women to bartend. So legally, you're not even allowed. So that's that's another level of complexity. But Delhi, you can. The challenge is that we have to overcome all of that and then still have great, legit women. I don't want to hire women for the sake of being a woman. That sort of completely, you know, it's a no use gender balance there.
True, I agree. So a few questions now for you as a startup entrepreneur. You know, You've done several projects, you know, three you've just spoken about, Cocktails and Dreams, Sidecar and Speakeasy, and I'm sure you're looking at many more.
Yes.
What, in your opinion, are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup entrepreneurs make?
I've seen a lot of people in a really big hurry to grow. And I feel that you need to have a certain stability before you look at growth, a certain brand equity. And I feel, I'm also talking industry specific,
sure.
which is something I know. And that is a very key thing. So stabilize your business and look at getting your brand equity in place. The what's called the brand love. And if that is in place, that you know that, you know, it's working for you, is when you know, go to the next step. Instead of looking at, you know, 10 outlets in the first 1 year, because you are obviously stretching yourself too far. And this is a very, very human intensive industry as well, which means that your skills are your top priority. So for me, if my bartender is not good enough, I cannot grow. If my chef is not good enough, I cannot grow. You know, it's not just me. I'm not cooking in the kitchen or, you know, making the drinks myself. So it's such a human intensive industry. So you have to make sure that, you know, the people you trust and the core team that you form is ready to take that pressure.
Correct.
Instead of, you know, just being like, okay, let's go, you know, boom, correct, like I have got the money, so let's grow.
Correct, absolutely. So let me move to a few questions, Watch, for you personally. You know, you have been in the corporate sector with Taj, with Azure, Pernod Ricard, you've been an entrepreneur. Are there any people who've had an influence on your life? And if yes, what have you been some of the learnings from them?
Massive. I've been massively influenced by the people, especially the people I've worked with. Personally, my father is one of my role models. He's the one who actually told me to quit my job in Pernod Ricard and move on. Because I would constantly talk about, you know, how working in an MNC is, you know, decision making is slower and all of that. And he knew about what I wanted to do. He kept telling me that this is the best time. And I was 28 at that time. So he said, you know, don't worry about it. Just go for it. And I'm there, you know, so whatever it is, we'll figure it out. And I think that was a massive push for me personally. Professionally, in terms of the people I've worked with, one of the first people that I worked was with Taliho, and the CEO, Vikram Achanta, has had a huge influence in the way I work even now as on today. So he gave me the disease of Excelitis, is what we joke about. So he loves Excel sheets. And so I cannot plan anything in my life without an Excel sheet. I was getting married, I had an Excel sheet. I have a baby Excel sheet as well. So, you know, I have a list, so everything goes green and then it goes yellow and then it goes pink. So I have that. So I think I got that from him. And I learned the value of planning. I've learned the value of giving it due diligence, which is really important. And I've also learned from him a very important thing, which is brainstorming. So do not undervalue your colleagues and the people who work with you, no matter how their experience is and what they come from. But there is always something you're learning from everyone every day. And the day you think you know it all and, you know, I am the boss, so I say it and that's how it works, is a negative way of looking at it. And I think he was very, very always there with his ears open, and he would always ask me my idea and I was being heard. And I saw that the value of that, because that was a massive drive for me to do more, you know. So that is something I really try and inculcate in our system as well. So, you know, we put the idea on the table and say, okay, what do you guys think? And I think that generates another energy completely, because, you know, everyone is a part of it. You own the idea with everyone else. And I think that magic is something else, because that was a massive thing, you know, respecting your colleagues, respecting their ideas, you know, respecting their background and cultural backgrounds as well. So I'm also like a Air Force kid. So I've studied in 9 different schools in my life. So, you know, culturally I've been exposed to, you know, north, south, east, west, across. And I think that also cuts across for you to, you know, be at least you can meet people with the same.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. So my next question, Meenakshi, would be, what would be 3 words that define or describe you?
Wow, tough one. I would say that I'm an eternal optimist. So optimistic is my number one, I think, quality which works well for me. The second thing I feel is that I am a very passionate person when it comes to anything and everything. Mm-hmm. So if it comes to work, I go all out and that's all I'll do. Mm-hmm. And anything else that comes my way, I take it with that same same kind of a spirit. Mm-hmm. And the third thing that I would like to say that describes me is, I mean, personally, I feel that I'm an adventurer, mm-hmm. and I'm always out for new experiences. Okay. So, you know, so if you tell me tomorrow that, oh, there's a great new thing that's opened up, let's go check it out, I'm all for it. Okay. So I leave my things to do and go for it. You know, things like there's a rock climbing institute which is open and I'm looking forward to, I've been trying to gather people to go with me. If none, then I'll go on my own. So it's one of those things. Okay. So that's it. That is my biggest drive. I look forward to new experiences. Okay. So this was a great new experience for me. So yeah.
You know, delighted to have you on the show. So my last question to you, and this one relates to failure. Since you have a baby spreadsheet, you know, I'm going to say that, you know, in India particularly and all over Asia, we don't teach our children that it's okay to fail. You know, we always keep telling everyone, come first, be ahead of class, etc., etc. Yet we keep failing.
Yes.
What, in your experience, have been some of your learnings from some of the mistakes you've made or some of the failures you've had?
See, I would say that failure is part of life. Okay. And, you know, nobody can ever claim that they have always, you know, succeeded in everything that they've done. What I feel that what I've learned from my failure is that I tend to revisit it and look at it and at least try not to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe the timing wasn't right. Maybe the effort wasn't there. Mentally, I wasn't mm-hmm. present. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that I've learned from my failure, is the fact that I have to be mentally present mm-hmm. In that moment to make it succeed. Right. So sometimes you end up stretching yourself to 5 different projects. Mm-hmm. And then you realize that, okay, but how am I going to manage mm-hmm. this? Because there is also like, that takes time and it's all of that. Mm. And then you have to look back and say that, okay, we need to stop somewhere. So, you know, and look at it, let's prioritize, you know, where is, yeah. which burner is mm. what going on. Everything cannot be on front.
Correct.
So that is something that I've learned, you know, with 2 or 3 projects where I felt that, you know, we could have not done that time or taken a little more time mm. or made a little more effort a little differently. Mm. Maybe the team wasn't ready, you know. So all of these, I mean, there are hazard things you can learn from your failures. I think right. those are your, I think those are my biggest experiences as well. So if I hadn't failed, then how would you know the, you know, taste of success?
Correct. I agree. That's very well said.
Yes.
So Meenakshi, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you.
One of these days, I'm going to come and visit your bar.
Yes, you have to, and we have to have our malts. I will give you. I promise you malts that you haven't had before.
Okay. Done. So thank you very much, and I wish you lots of success.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.